This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into another edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast. Evan Lazar with you as always with Adam Curtin. And today's podcast is sponsored by our friends at 1-in-100. Go to 1in100.co for your chance to win killer Pats, Celtics, Bruins, and concert tickets in the New England area for the price of a beer or a large pizza. Once again, that is 1in100.co, and that's price of beer at Gillette Stadium, which is pretty hefty. Yeah. So that's a pretty good deal. But Adam, we're going to get into it pretty much right away here with the Pittsburgh Steelers, but we also had some leftover thoughts from the loss on Sunday, none of which I don't think involved the last play. I think that we've all kind of moved on from that and kind of just looking at some of the big picture things that happened for the Patriots on Sunday. We want to start on the offensive side of the ball. A pretty impressive showing, at least in the first half. I think that the first half of that game was some of the best offense we've seen the Patriots play all year. Obviously, it didn't go so well or as well in the second half. But who impressed you the most in that loss on Sunday offensively? Was it Brady, Gronk, Edelman? Josh Gordon had a really good game too.
Not in terms of who impressed me the most, but I think who was most important in there. Good play was Gronkowski, in my opinion. I think, you know, when you get a guy like him going, you know, everybody else gets a little bit more open in the passing game once they have to really start to worry about Gronkowski. And, you know, I just think given how much he looked like he was starting to decline before, you know, to have him looking the way he did is such a good sign for the Patriots that, you know, I think you can point to that and say, okay, all right, well, this offense can be what it was and reach its potential. So yeah, I think when you look at what you want to see out of the offense from last week, you take a peek at that Gronkowski stuff and say, all right, this is what we want to see.
Yeah, I think the good news with Gronk is that the Dolphins basically treated him just like another tight end. They played a lot of soft zone coverages. They gave him a lot of free releases at the line of scrimmage. They manned up against him with linebackers like Kiko Alonso and Jerome Baker, and Gronk had his way with everybody. And the good news is there is that, like you said, you know, future opponents, whether it's the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Bills in a couple weeks or whatever the case may be, are going to look at that tape from Miami and say, okay, we can't just treat Gronkowski like he's the 15th best tight end in the league, you know, because he's too good for that still, even if he's not quite all pro level Rob Gronkowski. So that's good news just from a schematic standpoint, because other teams are going to start game planning for Gronkowski a little bit more heavily, which is going to just open up options for everybody else. That's going to open up Julian Edelman. It's going to open up Josh Gordon. So in order to kind of, you know, do I think his explosiveness was all the way back in that game? Do I think that was like peak Gronkowski? No, but I think that it's enough to show teams, all right, you can't just treat him, you know, like he's just a jag, like he's just another guy, and that we're just going to play soft zones. We're going to play man coverage with linebackers. We're not going to do anything exotic against him to slow him down because, you know, he's just not running the same like he used to. I think on Sunday, at least, we saw that he's going to be able to impact the game if you give him the opportunities to do so, and it's going to take a game plan, it's going to take a scheme thing to slow him down completely. So I think that was, you know, great news for the Patriots. I also thought, you know, just to give another answer besides Gronk, that Tom Brady's performance was maybe the best two quarters of football he's played all year in the first half, and certainly throughout the whole four quarters, one of his best games just overall. Now, obviously, there was some issues situationally, especially at the end of the first half. I don't really give him as much of a knock for the end of the game situation because that was just the play calling just decided to hand the ball off three times. So there's really nothing that he could really do to stop that or prevent that. But I think overall, what we saw was a Brady that threw the ball with a lot more velocity down the field, you know, hitting guys with a lot more ball velocity on those throws of 10 or more yards after a game plan against Minnesota where he barely threw the ball downfield. So it was good to see him kind of push the ball back downfield. His footwork in the pocket was as clean as I've seen it pretty much all season, and he was still seeing the field. I thought that maybe he saw the field a little bit better than any game that I've seen him see it all year, just in terms of going through his progressions. I mean, he was deciding and going through his progressions in his drop. He was already knowing where he was going with the ball, and as soon as he hit that back foot, the ball was already out. The timing of that is just is excellent, and really put the Patriots in a lot of situations for guys like Gordon, especially to create yards after the catch, because the ball, the anticipation was just so on point that it was he was hitting guys in stride. He was giving them opportunities to run and catch with the ball. So Brady, Gronkowski, if they get that performance at him from those two guys in the playoffs, I don't know if they're going to get it for the next 3 weeks every week. You know, I think that's lofty expectations, but if they can get that performance from those two guys in the playoffs, and this team, you know, is going places. I think that they have as good of a chance as anybody, as good as, you know, a puncher's chance as anybody in the AFC if they have those two guys clicking at this level.
Right, I agree. And, you know, it's especially good considering, you know, how they were playing beforehand and how people were sort of, you know, implying that they're either, you know, coming down to the end of their
cliff.
Yeah, the cliff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the sort of what everybody was saying. And so it's, you know, you don't really want to blame those people too much because there were some, you know, bad play in between. So, but you know, if they've found their groove again and they're, you know, starting to play like they're usually playing, then this is a different team.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens in Pittsburgh, but really since week five, kind of the addition of Josh Gordon and the return of Julian Edelman, Tom Brady has been a top five quarterback in the league. Now, I know when I say that, everybody is like, the eye test doesn't tell you that. You know, he had a bad game in Tennessee. He had a bad, you know, not a bad second half against Miami, but not as good as his first half. You know, there's evidence of, you know, on the tape, and you know, there's articles being written about, is this finally it? Are we finally seeing the drop off? And the funny thing is when you look at his numbers since week five compared to last year when he won the MVP of the league, they're pretty much identical. And honestly, the passing yards per game is actually more this year than it was last year. He's averaging over 300 yards a game since week five. Yeah. So even though we want to say that he's declining, his touchdown rate is down a little bit. He's going to throw probably two more interceptions or maybe one more interception than he did last year. But, I mean, we're talking about a guy at 41 years old who is basically replicating his 40-year-old MVP season. Yeah. And we're talking about declining. So I think that the expectations and the nitpicking of Tom Brady's game, you know, you can go through every quarterback's film and kind of look and see, all right, he missed this throw. You know, this throw wasn't his best. The ball placement on this one was bad. He overthrew this guy. You can do that. The guys are throwing 40 times a game. Like, not every single throw is going to be perfect. So I think that it's kind of the, you know, just what happens when you wear the crown, right? When you're the king, you know, everybody's going to take shots at you. And I think that that's what's happening a lot this year with Tom Brady. All right, on the other side of the ball, there's definitely reason for more concern, I would say, defensively right now. This is a very Jekyll and Hyde defense, and we're going to talk about the road struggles in a little bit, but the defensive road home road split is staggering. I mean, they're giving up a touchdown more, almost 100 yards more per game on the road than they are at home. They just can't seem to figure it out. But the question is the run defense or the pass defense more worrisome for you? Because over the last 2 weeks, they've gotten absolutely gashed by two average or to below average run teams.
Yeah. To me, I'm always on the side of it's scarier when you can't stop the run, because I feel like not every team has a great passing game. Not every team has a great quarterback, but every team can sort of take advantage of you if you can't stop the run. And I feel like that's one of those things where if a team can run on you, they can end up sort of picking away at anything, you know, and it'll just snowball from there. So in my opinion, if you can't stop the run, you're in real, real trouble. So, you know, especially on the road, it's just a bad thing to have happen. We've seen it a lot, you know, you know, with I mean, I feel like the worst example was that Detroit game. You know what I mean? You know, they're just pounding them. They're like, we're going to run it. And you're just
the Miami game actually on the tape looked a lot very similar in a lot of ways to the Detroit game.
Yeah.
There's guys not getting off their blocks, guys taking bad angles in the secondary. I mean, you know, not to pick on anybody individually, but the safeties could definitely do a better job of taking some better angles when the ball does get to that second or third level and prevent some of those longer runs. So, the run defense as a whole right now, I think a lot of people are kind of questioning why Danny Shelton hasn't been active for the last 2 weeks. I think against Minnesota, it made more sense because the Vikings just are not a running team. You know, they knew that they were going to pass about 65-70% of the time, so they really didn't have a reason to have both Malcolm Brown and Danny Shelton active. But I think that, like you said, what Bill Belichick always says is that if you can't stop the run on first and second down, you can't get into situations on third down where you can get off the field. Because then it becomes third and short. It's a lot of third and fours, a lot of third and threes. You don't know if you can rush the passer because it might be a run. So the offense is a lot, you know, less predictable in that sense. And it really helps to get after the passer and scheme things in the secondary when you know that it's going to be a pass or a run. So when you're kind of that unpredictability of it comes into play, it's a lot harder to play defense. And I think that, you know, you got to be good, in my opinion, and is I think what you kind of were saying, you got to be good at one thing, right? Like, if you're a defense, you got to have one thing that you can hang your hat on. You got to be able to either stop the pass or stop the run. You can't kind of be mediocre at both. That's when you really are in trouble. So I think that this Patriots team has always kind of predicated itself on being a good run defense.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true. I mean, like, they, you know, if you know, it, with the teams on their schedule, I mean, it really doesn't even matter how good the other team is if you can't stop the run, right? I mean, I feel like everybody in the NFL can take advantage of a bad run defense. So it's just a matter of, you know, stopping that. And then, you know, going on to the next thing, because I feel like there's good players that they have. It's just that I don't really have a good understanding as to why it's been like this, because it really is a stark, you know, it is and pretty obvious, you know, very, you know, difficult problem they're having right now. And it's not something that they want to, you know, keep going here. I mean, this is such a this is something that can really knock you out of the playoffs, or, you know, where whatever. It's a bad thing.
Yeah, and just in terms of what exactly is going on, from what I've seen, they're having a lot of trouble getting off blocks at the second level. Those linebackers, especially against Miami, were just getting swallowed up by blocks and really not playing with good pad level or hand usage. And this is exactly what we saw against Detroit. And they aren't able to get off those blocks and make tackles at the second level. On the D-line, you know, sometimes they've had trouble setting the edge. Other times it was guys getting reached where they shouldn't have gotten reached, like a three tech getting reached on an outside run, which just, you know, you should be able to get there if you're playing in that spot with that kind of leverage. Overall, it's just, it's fundamentals, honestly. And I know that that's not, like, you know, sexy or kind of interesting to say, but it's honestly what it is. It's playing with your hands. It's playing with good pad level. It's knowing kind of where you are and where your advantage should be on a particular play. So if they are running to the outside and you're the edge or you're a three tech DT, then that needs to be a play that you get outside of. You know, you can't allow that to get outside of you. You know, those are the little things. I think it would help if they brought Danny Shelton back, just give Malcolm Brown kind of a challenger and also maybe a guy that can spell him a little bit and just have it more be a rotation of that kind of nose tackle, one tech position, whatever it's going to be. But I don't know if he's necessarily the savior, but it's certainly interesting to see that, you know, the 2 weeks that they've made him inactive, they've given up over 9 yards a carry without him. You know, that can't completely be a coincidence. I don't think that he was necessarily playing that great when he was playing, and that's probably why he's been inactive, but it's not a complete coincidence that is the case. All right, let's look at, you know, start moving on and look at into Pittsburgh here. Obviously, the Patriots are 3-4 on the road right now. They're in jeopardy of being below 500 on the road for just the second time in the Belichick-Brady era, that 2009 team, which this team is starting to give me eerie kind of feelings of similarity to that 2009 team. But regardless of that, what do you think it is that they just can't seem to, especially on the defensive side of the ball, get up for these road games?
It's strange. It almost it's almost like a chemistry thing. Sometimes you feel like it's now this is just a dumb theory that is sort of based on nothing from this year. But, you know, I feel like sometimes teams with chemistry issues can't sort of come together and overcome adversity on the road. And teams that do have like that sort of togetherness really battle through adversity well. And so, you know, I don't know if that's it, but it's something, it's an intangible that it's that's lacking there. It's not, you know, a player or two that's not playing well. So I think it could be something like that. The players always talk about the dynamics of being on the road, being different about it, that, you know, it's a different routine. You're not at home all the time and stuff like that. They always talk about that sort of thing. So, but, you know, in years past, it just hasn't been this type of issue. The real thing that I look at, and this wasn't necessarily the case last week because it was a close game and sort of a fluke one. But when in those games where they get down and they don't sort of fight back, it seems like, and they sort of just sort of get, you know, they just sort of give up almost in those games where they get blown out. Those are the ones where you sort of look at and you say, well, something's really not right here. I don't necessarily think that it's going to be like that this week, because after a loss sometimes, and a loss that's that bad, they tend to like jump back and play much better. But I think you're going to learn a lot about the team this week if they don't.
Yeah, I think that really, you know, the players, like you mentioned, they talk about, you know, being different on the road, different routine. They talk about energy, like how you have to manufacture your own energy because you don't have energy from the crowd to feed off of. They also talk about lack of focus at times on the road, where they have some of these lulls that if they have them at home, maybe they have in certain games here at Gillette Stadium. But when they do, they have the crowd to kind of pick them back up and bring them back, you know, into that focus and bring them back up to that energy level that they need to be at. So maybe that's part of it. I think that the biggest thing that worries me, though, is that if teams that aren't necessarily those elite teams and teams that are just flat out bad, now obviously I don't think this Patriots team is that, don't play well on the road. You know, the teams that are good play well everywhere. Teams that are, you know, maybe not that next stop below are 500 teams on the road, you know, and I'm not saying that necessarily this is, you know, going to be their death knell or anything like that. But, you know, I need to see in this Pittsburgh game a performance on the road that shows that this team is doesn't matter where they are, because a Belichick team, for the most part, throughout the entire, you know, 18 years here, 19 years has. You can play at Gillette, you can play at Pittsburgh, you can play in Mexico City, you can play in London, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, they're the Patriots and they're going to come out and play like that. I think this Miami game was close. I think that they were really close to, although it was a, you know, a close game, it's always been a tough, place for them to play. Right. And I thought that they competed well throughout the whole game until the final play, really. They played pretty much competed their asses off for four quarters, maybe, all right, let's say, like, you know, 59 minutes and 50 seconds, you know, for the last 7 seconds of the game. But, you know, even on that last play, you kind of saw, you know, the rallying to the ball really wasn't there.
Oh, no.
And the effort and the focus, and everyone was just kind of like, oh, there's no way that they're going to do this. You know, there's no way that they're going to run it 69 yards. You know, somebody else is going to catch them. Somebody else is going to make a tackle, push them out of bounds, whatever the case may be. And everyone was just, you know, kind of standing around. And there wasn't really a ton of hustle on that play. or a ton of effort. And that's kind of been indicative of, you know, what happens at times on the road. You know, a lot of people want to pick on the coaching and the personnel. Why was Gronkowski in the game? All those kinds of things. At the end of the day, if the 10 other guys minus Gronkowski rally to the football and make a tackle on Kenyon Drake, then he doesn't score, you know, and it never gets to Gronkowski. The execution on the field was way worse than the personnel decision.
Yeah.
Let me put it to you that way.
Yeah, they were just sort of jogging next to him.
Yeah. And Kenyon Drake, like, you know what? He's a faster player, but I wouldn't call him. He's not explosive. He's not Tyree Kill, you know, where it just like was, you couldn't catch the guy from behind once he got loose, you know, it that part of it is, that was kind of like a microcosm of all the issues that we've seen this from this team on the road, you know, lack of speed, lack of rallying to the ball, maybe a little bit of lapses in effort here and there. And unfortunately it just cost them on a game winning play, you know, in that situation. All right. Enough about the defense. Hopefully that they turn it around and play more like they do here at Gillette Stadium most of the time. But we wanted to talk about the run game as well on the offensive side of the ball, because that's been pretty Jekyll and Hyde too. You know, some weeks it's there, some weeks it's not. And where do you think the issues start with? And you know, do you think that we see it come back to earth or, you know, be something successful again this week?
I think it's a pure blocking issue.
Yeah.
I think if the blocking's there, the running game's fine. If the blocking's not, the running game's not fine. And that sort of lends itself to just having an inconsistent running game. You know, if you don't have a back who is, you know, sort of a dominant back, right? Like a guy who can get you yards no matter what, then you're sort of privy to whatever sort of run defenses you go up against, you know, you're at the mercy of that. So, but you know, it's just inconsistent. And so, you know, I think, you know, if you look at it and say, well, okay, well, you know, Edelman's starting to, you know, play better. Gordon's Gordon and Gronkowski's starting to play better, then okay, maybe it's not as big of an issue. So, but I always think you're going to need to have a solid running game to win, even if it's not as big of a part of it. So will it break out against Pittsburgh this week? I don't necessarily think that's the team that, you know, your running game is going to get going against. I'm not sure exactly, Pittsburgh's analytic numbers are against the run.
Very good, as I think you're alluding, you know, you're kind of expecting it to be.
Yeah,
very good run defense.
So, you know, I feel like, you know, I wouldn't judge the run game on this week then, but it would be nice to see, you know, it pop off against a really good run defense. But I kind of feel like, you know, it's developing, you know, Sony is, you know, somebody who is still a rookie, even though he's played enough games now where you can expect him to, you know what he's doing out there. And sometimes the rotations are a little off, but I don't think this week is the week where you're going to see Sony, you know, go back to what he did in a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think what we've seen with Sony, just from him individually, besides the blocking itself, is that once he gets free, you know, once he's into that second and third level, that he's good in that situation. You know, he's very good at picking up extra yards after contact, and he can make guys miss on occasion, and he can run by guys and run through guys, and he's a good back at that second and third level. But he's not the type of back that necessarily, although he did have a nice run, you know, kind of making a defender miss in the backfield against Miami, where he's going to consistently do, like, you know, something that, like, what Deion Lewis did last year for this team, where he's just dancing out of tackles at the line, you know, in the hole and at the line of scrimmage. Yeah. So if there's no place for him to go and get rolling, he's a runway back. You know, he needs that space to kind of move. The Pittsburgh run defense right now is sixth in PFF's rankings, and they are very high, I believe, in DVOA. They are seventh in DVOA. So yeah. it's gonna be tough sledding for the Patriots, getting the ball rolling on the ground. But I couldn't agree with you more that it's a blocking issue. These backs, if you give them holes, James White, Burkhead, Sony, yeah, they're gonna create yards. You know, that's really what it is. And for some reason, and as good as this offensive line is at times, and as good as Skarnecchia is, for some reason there's just been breakdowns in the front when this run team is not running well. And I think the main, you know, issue is that there's a few guys on that offensive line, mainly looking at Trent Brown right now, that when he has a bad game run blocking, it's a bad game. You know, and it can really, you know, not that one guy can really torpedo the whole thing, but you have a bad game from Trent Brown, and then you don't have as dominant of a game from the other four guys, and right, that's when you can really start to, you know, see the whole thing kind of come apart. And in Miami, he was not good at all run blocking, but then the week before against Minnesota, he was an absolute beast run blocking. So he seems to just be pretty hot and cold, and for whatever reason, his production and his hot and coldness is kind of what's dictating whether the Patriots can run the ball or not on a weekly basis. So I think that the whole thing is there to be had. And I think they want to be a running team because Belichick knows, you know, once it starts to get cold, if they play a playoff game in January where it's snowing and it's a blizzard and it's 10 degrees out and there's a foot of snow on the ground, then Tom Brady especially at 41 years old is not going to be able to throw the ball 40 yards down the field through the snow.
Right.
So they have to be able to be a team that can run the ball. The play action stuff, I'm going to lean on my analytics guys and say that you don't need to be able to run the ball to set up play action. This is kind of like a myth among the numbers people that were trying to debunk that the play action passing game can operate outside of a successful running game. The two of them actually don't go hand in hand as much as you would think. But at the same time, I think that part of the reason why the play action passing game is so successful for the Patriots is because a lot of their play actions look exactly like their runs. So when you have that running game rolling and you see the pulling guard, if you're a linebacker, you're going to scream up because you know you think it's run and then they're actually running play action or whatever the case may be. So as much as it disappoints me that this run game can't be more consistent, especially also in short yardage and inside the 10. Inside the 10-yard line in goal-to-go situations, the Patriots right now are 27th in touchdown percentage in the league. They're really bad. Throw out the running game in those situations, honestly, and put the ball in Tom Brady's hands. That's kind of where I'm at because Sony Michel is not a short down running back. Cordero Patterson, maybe, but still no, in my opinion. And that's never obviously been something that James White or Burkhead has really been particularly good at. Yeah, I like the addition of kind of having Devlin down by the goal line as kind of your goal line back inside the one or inside the two. But in terms of like running from first and goal from the eight, I think that it's probably best for them to just go with putting the ball in Tom Brady's hands for now. All right, let's move on to the matchup of the week, I would call it. And that is obviously the Pittsburgh wide receiver duo and Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown versus the Patriots secondary. First off, watching that tape against Oakland and just kind of last couple games of Pittsburgh, as good as Antonio Brown is, I just want to say Juju Smith-Schuster is unreal, an unreal player. And if I was like buying stock in either one of those guys, I'd be buying Juju stock right now before I'm buying AB stock, I would say.
It's crazy. I thought Juju was good in college.
Yeah.
But I didn't see this coming.
A lot of people had that Anquan Boldin comp for him.
He's faster. He
way more explosive than Anquan Boldin ever was.
Well, he can cross the center of the field and get to the other side and outrun guys.
Yeah.
Which is the sign of somebody who's got serious wheels. So I'm with you on this. And I know you like your USC guys too, but I mean, but I think
it kills me that I watched him play and I was like, oh, this guy, he can play in the slot. He can play out. He's like Chris Hogan on steroids, right? Like he's just like, he's like that role in the Pittsburgh offense, but he's so much better at it. And I was like, he's sitting there. It's like, he's a late second round pick. Go ahead. Just
yeah, but he's, the guy is a monster out there. He's so much fun to watch. So, I mean, look, this is a big guy with speed, power. He's good after the catch, not just because of his speed, but because he's hard to take down. This is a guy that you have to worry about after the catch, I think, not just getting open and catching the ball, because he is, he can hurt you that way. He's just a dangerous guy. So, in my opinion, when the Patriots are looking at a guy like Schuster, it's a matter of limiting his after the catch yards. Okay, so just if he catches it, if you can just bring him down 5 yards, you got to take that as a win sometimes, even if he does catch the ball. So he's just a dangerous dude out there, and you can't let him get free and start running out there in the wide open, or else you're gonna be in for a very long day.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that he's improved on that I can see from in college to the pros is his route releases, and his releases at the line of scrimmage now are just lethal. I mean, he's just like he's just crossing up guys. I think what the biggest thing for him that has been is probably working with Antonio Brown, because Antonio Brown is easily the best route releaser, maybe besides Doug Baldwin, in the entire NFL. So you can kind of see the impact of studying under Brown and kind of probably picking up a bunch of stuff from Antonio, what that has meant for Juju, because it's just really taken his game. And USC, I never understood the kind of the comps that he was getting. He was getting comp to slow guys, just like flat out slow guys, because his 40 time wasn't off the charts, but he played faster than that always. And he's way much quicker than those types of guys that he's being compared to. So I he's a unique player. I mean, he's one of a kind, and he can also go up and get it too. I mean, he's a contested catch guy too, that can catch the ball above his head and haul passes in and stuff like that also. So, I mean, to me, this matchup in terms of who's going to have who and how the Patriots defend it reminds me a lot of Diggs and Thielen. I think that they're a very similar kind of duo, obviously Thielen being Juju and Diggs being Antonio Brown. Play in similar alignments. Thielen and Juju are mostly slot guys predominantly, and Antonio Brown and Stephon Diggs on the outside. And what we saw the Patriots do a lot in that Minnesota game was put brackets on both guys and kind of play them inside out. It gives you the opportunity to just make it as hard as possible on them to make a catch. But if they do make a catch, now you have two guys chasing them instead of one. So it's easier to get them on the ground afterwards too. So in terms of who has who though, I'm curious to hear, do you think it's going to be Gilmore, Jason McCourty, JC Jackson? Who's going to kind of draw that matchup?
Well, that's a tough one. I wouldn't be surprised to see, You really want to see, Gilmore on the best guy, but it's one of those deals too where there's two best guys. You can't really say one is someone who you should put your second best guy on. So, for me right now, it might even be Schuster. He's just playing so well. So
he does seem to match up size wise better with Schuster.
Yeah.
And the worry I have is that when Gilmore has traveled into the slot at times this year is really the only time that he's ever had any real problems. That's what the Titans did with Corey Davis. They put him a lot in the slot, and they ran a lot of from the slot, corner routes, that type of stuff from inside. And Gilmore had some trouble kind of staying outside of those routes. But I think body type wise, the guy that they always used to put on Antonio Brown was Malcolm Butler. Malcolm, if there was one thing that Malcolm Butler was good at, he was really good at defending Antonio Brown. It's kind of the type of receiver he was built to kind of defend. So that kind of puts the Patriots in an interesting predicament with AB, because they don't have a guy, I don't think, who's like an obvious matchup guy, where I think Gilmore is a little bit more obvious on Juju.
Right. I think the height thing, you can't downplay that.
So I
think that makes sense.
Yeah.
And there's also things where I think you might just like, you know, throw some zones where guys just don't get deep past you. You know, I mean,
yeah.
There should be a healthy mix there.
Yeah, I wonder. So this is kind of my working theory, is I wonder if they don't necessarily travel or shadow those two guys with anyone in particular, and it kind of gets dictated based on where they align in the formation. So I think that Jason McCourty is a better fit in the slot covering Juju than Gilmore is. So yeah. When Juju's in the slot, I think that we might see Jason McCourty with maybe a bracket with Devin in the slot like they did against Thielen. Then when Juju goes outside, I think he might see Gilmore. And I think Doug Kida was the first one to kind of throw this out there. I think we could see some JC Jackson on Antonio Brown, you know, obviously with help. But that would kind of allow them to kind of do that inside outside thing with Juju and move Gilmore around based off of then where that is. And then Gilmore, they play a ton in 11 personnel, the Steelers. So then Gilmore can kind of take that third guy on an island and shut him down. And you get the double brackets on with JC and Duron. And then obviously the two McCourty twins bracketing Juju Smith-Schuster in the slot. So maybe that's the way that they go. It's an interesting one because I don't think that Gilmore is a great matchup for Brown. Brown is you know, so quick and speedy, and that little like kind of jitterbug receiver just never has really been the type of guy that Gilmore has fared well against.
I agree.
All right. I think that about wraps it up for us. We covered everything here that I can think of. Is there any matchup or any one player that on the Pittsburgh side that you're kind of watching for this weekend that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, got to be James Conner, right?
Yeah, if he plays, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like
it's a big development in the game is because if he doesn't play, they don't have much of a running game. Yeah. If he does play, then all of a sudden the running game is a huge factor.
Yeah, I'm not even sure who their guy behind him is.
It's Jalen Samuels.
Oh God, yeah. Well,
we talked about him for a little bit in the draft process.
Yes, we did. Well, he's pretty decent. So, I mean, like, I don't know, their run blocking is so good. Most times that it almost doesn't matter. But I feel like Connor, if he plays, would be one of those difference maker types. And you know, I feel like in general, it's one of those games where after a game you have like that against the Dolphins, if you can turn around and have a good game against the run, then it would be an extra boost to the defense.
Yeah, I think that what I'm looking at, just to give something else besides Connor, interior of that Steelers defensive line to it, Cameron Hayward, and Hargrave. Those three players are all really good in every way, both against the run and the pass. If you want to get the run game going, Hayward's the guy that you need to block. He needs to be a guy that you probably are going to have to double team on the inside. He's like borderline all pro. It's a loaded position, obviously, so it's tough to get all pro at the defensive tackle position in today's NFL. But he's up there with Geno Atkins, maybe not quite on Aaron Donald's level, but right on that second tier of DTs. So he's a beast. That interior, obviously, we know what it can do to Tom Brady in the pass rush when they get that pressure up the middle. But mostly with the running game, to get that running game going, they're going to have to block those two or three guys or however they do it. And they play a lot of 3-4, big 3-4, where they put to it at defensive end and they play Hayward in the middle. That can also be problematic too. So I'll look for those guys. Connor, is his injury status is probably the biggest, you know, pregame thing that we're going to have. You know, it's huge. If he's not in the game, then they really haven't run the ball at all without him in there. And Samuels has kind of been the guy that they give it to him sometimes and to run the ball, but mostly it's been, you know, using his skill as a receiver out of the backfield, you know, to kind of burn him that way. All right. What do you got coming up this weekend? Is there any college football on, or are we starting?
I think there is some college football, not locally, but there is, for me, there's going to be a lot of recruiting stuff, given that the early signing day is next Wednesday. So teams like Boston College, UMass, teams like that, and then, you know, the local prospects around here, keeping track of that, keeping people updated on who's going where. That's always interesting. It's BC's got almost its full class already committed. And it's going to be curious. I'm curious to see how much of that class actually signs in that early signing period, because that's always something you're looking for if you've got a big class coming in. And from what I've been told, it's going to be a lot of those guys will sign. So that's a good thing for them.
Yeah, that BC program is on the up, I think, even though a lot of people are kind of skeptical of the end of the season for them this year, I think, but they, all right. So on CLNSmedia.com, all three of us, me, Alex Barth, and my, Petraglia, will all be in Pittsburgh. We're doing a CLNS road trip to Pittsburgh this week. So that will be cool. Been planning this one for a while, since the beginning of the season. We kind of picked one road game that we were all, other than going to the Jets game, which is, you know, an easier one to get to, obviously. We picked one road game that we, all three of us, were going to be at. So that's going to be Pittsburgh on Sunday, which hopefully I haven't, obviously the Patriots haven't had much luck on the road, so neither have I. So hopefully they turn it around this week, but see what happens. But today I wrote about their offensive line. Pittsburgh's offensive line, obviously it's kind of the sexy matchup to talk about the wide receivers and all that stuff, but the offensive line's obviously playing really well too. And so I wrote about that today. Obviously on Friday, Patriots game plan, I'm not giving it away if you haven't listened to it yet, but or if you haven't, if you're listening to this today, tonight on Thursday when we're recording, but that'll be up on Friday. And then this weekend, hoping to talk to John Simon in the next couple days, a guy that I think has been kind of under the radar as, like, you know, not a star by any means, but 15, 20 snaps a game over the last couple of years. He's been a really productive pass rusher for a lot of different teams, Houston, Indianapolis, and now the Patriots. Obviously had a great game, one of the kind of the lone bright spots on the defensive side of the ball against Miami on Sunday. So I'll have that as well. Hopefully get a chance to talk to him today or tomorrow in the locker room. We'll go from there. But next week, Adam, we were just talking about it actually before we started taping. Josh Allen, hopefully he stays healthy enough to play next week, and the Buffalo Bills. Obviously not a ton of excitement around the Bills in terms of their record, but Allen has brought in a ton of excitement, just watchability, I guess I'll call it, fun to that team. And I'm like really looking forward to seeing him live and seeing what that guy can do, because he's running the heck out of the ball. And obviously we know how much of a cannon he has as an arm.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with Allen is the guy is somebody who physically, he has everything that you're looking for, you know? I mean, the guy can chuck it, and he's really – I mean, I knew he was, like a good runner in college and stuff, but it seems like he's even better in the NFL, you know? I mean, which is kind of crazy. You never see that. But, I mean, he's rushing for 100 yards left and right. So it'll be fun to watch him play, yeah.
Yeah, he has something like 250, 275 yards over the last 3 weeks rushing the ball. Obviously can throw, make every throw. I think that both of us, you know, along with a lot of the draft community that really got into the draft and watched a lot of these guys play, weren't really that high on him, you know, coming into the draft, just because of a lot of the warts that he had, especially with, you know, downfield accuracy and decision making and all that kind of stuff. And I've just been really impressed from what I've seen, that he's really taken to the coaching at the NFL level, Brian Daboll or whoever has got their hands on him in Buffalo has really done a really good job of coaching him up. And his process has improved tremendously from what it was in college. Footwork in the pocket, decision making, downfield accuracy can still be sporadic, but it's better. I mean, there's not as much on the tape of him just like airmailing guys by like 20 yards like you saw in college. Yeah. So that's like pretty impressive to see that it turn around this quickly, this fast for him. And it was even kind of signs of that in the preseason as well, of him already kind of, you know, taking to NFL coaching. So whoever's got their hands, whoever has his ear is doing a really good job with him. So I'm excited to talk about that next week. So we'll be back next week, talk about the Bills, to hopefully, you know, talk about a little bit about a win in Pittsburgh or, you know, not, and how the sky is falling. And we'll do that next week. And then only two more weeks, Adam, after this game. It's hard to believe, but we're right into week 15 and you know, the end of the season here. So hopefully the Patriots turn it up a little bit here at the end of the season. I think we saw glimpses of that in Miami. But until next week, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.